Welcome to Job Tales, the show where we find out about different professions from the people who know. Each week I speak to a new guest with a very interesting job. You'll hear about their personal paths to doing what they do, the skills required, and the tools they use for the job. I'm Laura Leoncini, and today my guest is Michael Gill, helicopter pilot at REGA, the Swiss Air Rescue. If flying is your passion, you might want to consider working for an organization whose mission is to provide air rescue and assist in emergency situations. A helicopter crew comprises a pilot, a paramedic, and a flight physician. Today, I have the privilege to interview one of REGA's pilots at the base in Lausanne. He just completed a mission to the hospital and has 20 minutes to dedicate to us. Here is Michael. Michael Gill, thank you very much for being my guest at Job Tales. Now, I would like to use today's experience that you've had to understand and explain to our listeners what does your job entail?
Nice to meet you. Thank you for having me. I'm working for REGA, which is a Swiss air ambulance company, and I'm working as a helicopter pilot. And while today we had two missions so far, we did the two types of missions we do actually is getting somebody from anywhere, in this case from her home, and brought the person to the nearest and best hospital to take care of her. And the second one was from one hospital to the other one, which we call a secondary mission, because the patient needed more specific treatments. By helicopter, it goes really fast, and we always have a doctor with us, so we can transport people from intensive care, from one intensive care to the other one, as we did just before we landed.
So you are a professional pilot, first of all. You are a pilot of helicopters, right? What was your academic background?
Well, I was interested in helicopters very early, when I was only 12, 13 years old, I think. And I had the possibility to start my private pilot license, which is the first step to do, when I was only 16 years old. But it's not really the kind of way parents prefer to see, and where you have, in general, a good outcome, where you study for it, you train for it, and you have a job. It's not that easy at all. So I had to do something useful as well. And that's when I went to university and I did a master degree in aeronautical engineering, which you don't need to be a helicopter pilot at all. But of course, it's helpful to understand how helicopters work and how you have to work with them. But that's my main training was in engineering at the university. Parallel to it, I could do the different trainings as a private pilot, as a commercial pilot, to become a helicopter pilot. And once I finished my studies, when I graduated, I also graduated as a commercial pilot. So I had two very nice options. I prefer to try to work as a helicopter pilot, and I'm still working as a helicopter pilot.
Before joining REGA, how did you work as a helicopter pilot? Was that a commercial pilot for helicopters?
I worked for another Swiss company, where I was working as a commercial pilot and a flight instructor. So I'm bringing passengers from one place to the other, and in the same time giving training to new pilots doing their private pilot license or commercial pilot license or even flight instructor courses, etc. So it took about 10 years, I think, or I did about 10 years in this company to gain experience and as a pilot myself, and to have enough experience to apply for a company like REGA.
So you were 16 when you started your PPL, your private pilot license. So that means that when you were very young, you knew what you wanted to become when you were, growing up.
Not really. I knew what was interesting me, but it was difficult to see helicopter pilot as a job, because there are not so many places. It's not easy to get a full-time job as a helicopter pilot and being able to live from this job. So I knew very young that I was interested in aviation in general, specifically helicopters. But that's why I had to find something else, to study something in the same direction. And that's where the aeronautical engineering was really a good solution for me. And I had the luck to be able to do my helicopter pilot training in the same time and work to my... It was not even a dream. I mean, it was step by step that my life grew in that, my professional life grew in that direction. So I don't think I really thought at the age of 16, I really want to become a helicopter pilot and work as a helicopter pilot. It took a lot of years to get there in my head as well.
And why helicopters and not airplanes, fixed wing airplane.
The freedom you have with a helicopter to be, you're not restricted to airports and airfields, and you can take off and land more or less anywhere. And I think this gave me the idea of having more freedom and more possibilities with a helicopter than with an airplane. As often, well, we hear that flying helicopters is more difficult than airplane. I don't know, because I'm not an airplane pilot, and I can imagine that landing and takeoffs and different situations can be very difficult as an airplane pilot as well. When I have the idea that something is more difficult, then I tend to choose this option because I like challenges, actually.
Okay, yeah, I can definitely tell. Now, when you finished your engineering studies, did you work at a company, like not being a pilot? Did you go that avenue?
No, not really. I took the chance to apply as a helicopter pilot, as a very young helicopter pilot with very few experience as an engineer as well. But I tried to find a job as a helicopter pilot, and I was lucky to be at the right place with the right attitude and papers to get a job and to gain my experience as a young helicopter pilot. So no, I never, after my studies, I never worked really as an engineer.
Do you find that your engineering studies were very helpful or not that helpful for your present career?
Within the company of Riga, it's really helpful because we're doing a lot of projects where we try to be part of a lot of projects and to get to do things that are not normal daily business, to have things like what we call the LFN, the low flight network, where we fly in at very low altitudes on instruments, so instrument flying, which means it can be within in clouds, and to work and to help and participate in these projects, it helps to have my academic background. But again, you don't really have to be an engineer or what kind of engineer to be a pilot. But it's helpful for me. But the studies and the price, let's say the effort to get this master degree was pretty high for what I take out of it. I would do it again, exactly the same. But again, you don't have to be an engineer to be a pilot.
Are there any limitations? Because, you know, when you talk about being pilot, there's, you know, physically, I know that you must be, you know, in a perfect state, and you need to pass medical examinations and, I guess, psychological examinations. Are there like specific limitations where, you know, if a young man or a young woman would like, you know, is listening to this podcast and say, oh yeah, I want to do so, but I'm colorblind, or I have not perfect view, you know, eyesight. Are these limitations where you really can't pursue a career as a pilot?
Yes, there are limitations. Actually, there are three things if you want to become a pilot. Three major things are the theoretical training, the practical training, of course, and maybe first of all, the medical checks you have to pass. My advice is to do these rather soon before putting too much energy and time and even money into a training, because the doctors, they will tell if you have fulfilled the requirements to be a pilot. And there are different levels as a private pilot or as a commercial pilot. And depending on your age, you have to do checks every 5 years, every 2 years, every year, every 6 months as a professional pilot above 40. And there's not a lot of room for negotiation. Sorry. So I don't know the limitations myself, but I'm very happy that until now I am always on the good side of the limitations, because otherwise the dream would come to an end, actually. And that's also a reason why I'm happy to be an engineer, that I could still do something else, still in aviation and aeronautical domain, and even if I wouldn't not be able to fly anymore.
Okay, yes, because I'm thinking also of the after, you know, when you get older and then your physical conditions then deteriorates naturally, and then you might not be able to do your job anymore, right? Do you know if that happens often, like people have to re-strategize their own profession?
No, it's not often as far as I know, but it happens. Yeah, can be an accident, can be something unforeseen, or some disease that is like, let's say, sleeping in your body and it's not visible for several years. But then all of a sudden it becomes more visible, and then the doctors say, okay, well, you're not apt to fly anymore.
Now, coming to Riga, which is your present job, and how did you make that step, you know, from being a commercial pilot to Riga? How many years went by, and then what was the trigger?
I was working, as I said before, about 10 years for another company before making the step to Rega. What triggered me was to be able to combine the using a helicopter as a tool and at the same time try to help people. And that's what Rega is doing, actually. We try to help people. We're not always rescuing. We're not saving lives every day. But we can bring more comfort and bring help to people. And that's what I really like by using a helicopter, a very technical tool like a helicopter. And this combination always attracted me, especially because just myself with a helicopter, I can fly, but that's it. I cannot do anything without my two colleagues, at least my two other colleagues, even a fourth one if we go into difficult terrain. And this teamwork was a very positive point for me as well to be interested in Rega. And being here now several years, it has only been confirmed that this teamwork and bringing this help to people is what drives me. So once I got the experience to apply for the job at Rega, that's what motivated me. Yeah.
You're talking about experience. Is there a specific experience required as a helicopter pilot in order to apply at Rega?
As published on our website, they ask for 2,000 hours of experience as a helicopter pilot, and half of it, so 1,000 hours on turbine helicopters, which is one kind of engine on a helicopter, and which is already quite some experience, next to experience as a pilot at night and in mountainous areas. So there are a lot of aspects and a lot of criteria you have to fulfill before being able to send your application to the company. This takes years to get there, actually. Yeah.
Right. Plus, in Switzerland, it's even more challenging because you have the mountains, you have the lakes, you have all kinds of topographical aspects, right? Mm-hmm. Which I guess also makes it very exciting also to have a job like this. Now, if I think and I imagine, you know, what happens during the day when you're in action, and you were talking about other colleagues and that your work would not be able to, you know, would not be possible without them. Can you describe like a, maybe not a typical day, but a day that you can remember that could be quite describing your job?
Well, first of all, we come in the morning and we start for a 24-hour shift. And often we do two shifts in a row. So very often we start, for example, at Saturday morning and we stay until Monday morning. And in these 48 hours, we are at our base where we eat, we sleep, we rest, we train, we do a lot of things. And as soon as the dispatch gives the alarm, we will take off. And in normal conditions, we will take off within 5 minutes during the day. But anyway, as soon as possible as well during the night. So in the morning, we meet our colleagues and we do a briefing. And we talk about how is the weather, how are we feeling, what are the things to do today, what is the helicopter, are there any technical issues we should know about. And once we're briefed, then we start to do our daily business, which means also cleaning the helicopter, cleaning the hangar, preparing our room for the night to come, doing some email work, as everybody has to do nowadays. Because we're actually never waiting for a mission to come in. We're always occupied doing something. A lot of training as well. Now we are, for the moment, the beginning of winter time, so we are training for avalanches again, and that we have the procedures really ready in our head to be able to go there. So we're doing a lot of training as well and retraining. We prepare something to eat because we're hungry. We eat together. It's really important that we have these three meals in the morning, lunch and dinner together. And it's the time to talk about something else than work and flying, about our families or whatever we want. And then all of a sudden the alarm goes off and we have to take off, which means that we stop doing whatever we were doing. We go to the helicopter. I really say we go to the helicopter. We're not in a rush. We're not running. Mm-hmm. We're doing everything as efficient as possible because everything has been prepared. All the switches in the helicopter at the right position to get in and start the helicopter as fast as possible. But again, without any rush, because we cannot afford making errors in our job. This is how the day goes on, and then in the evening we eat again together, and then we maybe watch some television, we go to bed, and then you have this like everybody, this moment where you're getting tired and you're more in a standby mode, and when the alarm comes, as it can come any time, then the adrenaline comes in and everything starts all over again, which works very fine even in the middle of the night, I would say. but it takes a lot of energy. Therefore, we have to recover the day after or the day after. So I can never say that I have a busy day before going to work, that I will have a busy day. No, I don't know what's coming. I know the standard stuff to do, but the rest which is coming towards us is always a surprise, as it can ring right now, actually.
Right, so I feel privileged that you can grant me some more time. So that sounds like, yeah, it can be very intense. And so you have like two full days of that you're completely immersed in your job. And then afterwards, how many more days then you have free after your shift? Yeah,
it depends. It varies from at least one day, of course, until 5 days, more or less. But I would say on average we have 2 or 3 days off. And then we come back for one or again a double shift. And that's how it goes on and on. But it's not a fixed rhythm. But luckily we know it a long time in advance, so we can plan our private lives around this.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It's exciting. And now, who are the others that come with you on the helicopter?
As I said, we are a crew of three. So first of all, we have the doctor, because we're giving medical care, so we need a doctor. And then we have the paramedic, who is used to work as a paramedic, but via the road during several years before coming into the helicopter and having its training as a crew member in the helicopter. The paramedic is sitting next to the pilot, so he's not a co-pilot, but he's helping and programming the navigation and doing the communication with our dispatch and different partners like the police or the fire department or whoever is there to help us and we to help them on the ground. So the doctor, the paramedic, and the pilot. Maybe the terrain, especially in mountainous area, is too difficult and too dangerous to bring our medic, our doctor, to the patient. So first of all, we go and get something, a mountain specialist, somebody who is really used to work in difficult terrain and who's also trained to work in and outside the helicopter with the possibility with our winch. We have a winch attached to the helicopter with a 90-meter cable. So we can put people, the specialist and our doctor, more or less anywhere with this tool and this equipment. So from time to time, we're a crew of four and always a crew of three.
Is there an ordinary day or something? Because, you know, of course, I have not an idea of what could happen. You know, you were talking about a patient that was brought to the hospital, but is there something ordinary and something extraordinary that you can think of that you want to share?
I think we get used to everything, but actually if we go out and we fly and we have this small intensive care flying around helicopter, then I think it's rather extraordinary that we can put these different jobs together under one rotor, spinning so fast that the entire thing can fly. We are used to it, but I think it's still quite impressive that we're able to do this and that we have the material and the training and everything at our disposal to do this kind of work. So that is already quite impressive, I think. But it's also good to see it as a normal job and to give whatever we can in our own job and bringing the three jobs together to make the result that we work for and to make it happen. And then, of course, when we can make the difference, when we really can rescue somebody, thanks to all what I mentioned before, the training, the material, and the crew, then the satisfaction is rather big when we come back after the mission, and that's a very nice feeling when we can make the difference. Yeah.
Is there one particular episode that you're very proud of, or that was very special to you?
Not really one in particular, but the missions we prefer actually are the when we evacuate somebody from a place where he or she cannot move anymore himself or herself. And when you know that for example, the night is falling or the storm is coming or the night will be very cold, you know what, if we don't get there and get this person back down from the mountain, then there's quite some pressure. And if we can realize the mission, if we can bring it to a good end, most of the time it's rather technical, so it's difficult flying, making decisions, bad weather, at night often. And if we can make this happen, then at the end of the mission, there's somebody standing next to us and not lying next to us. And then we can shake hands and say, well, take care and watch out for the next time before you go up. Maybe prepare yourself better. And there we have no, let's say, there's no harm, nobody is injured, nobody is sick, and the end is really a happy end, actually. Mm-hmm. And doing a technical work with the helicopter and having a happy end in the end is really what we prefer, actually, these kind of missions.
I can imagine there are some specific skills that you need to have in order to fulfill your job. And can you think of some, you know, more, I would say, soft skills, because of course the hard skills we know and the training you've undergone and so on. But how about the soft skills? Like if someone has a specific predisposition into being, I don't know, a patient or into being keeping cold blood when something urgent or serious happens, are these really shifting skills that can help you in your job, or is it something you can always acquire with time and experience?
Well, I think that experience helps a lot in difficult situations. What is important, first of all, is the teamwork, because we need really to have three greens, as they say in aviation. For a landing gear on a fixed wing, they say you need three greens before landing. It means that all three wheels are down before you land the airplane. Well, we need three greens before we go on with the mission. And we can stop at any time, actually. So if at some point the doctor says, no, I cannot guarantee this transport from A to B for this and this reason, then we have to find another solution. The same for the pilot, the same for the paramedic. As soon as one of them doesn't agree anymore, then we need to find another strategy. In that case, we have to agree to continue the mission and to continue on the strategy we chose. And as soon as something is not as planned, then we have to rethink it. And that's where all our training, all our experience comes in, and being a part of a team. We cannot just work alone. Mm-hmm. And that's something we start with the briefing in the morning, and we end the next day when we say bye-bye. And all the time we work together, we have to do it as a team. And that's really a key point for the kind of work we do, because just two of them, they cannot do anything. We need three.
Great. And one last question is, what do you suggest or recommend to the young people listening if they want to become rega pilots one day?
Maybe it's a cliche, but you don't give up your dreams, because it can be a dream to become a pilot in general or to become a rega pilot. And it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of motivation and effort to get there. And it's possible. I mean, we are dozens of pilots, and we are working. We don't start very young. So our careers at Rega are, let's say, about 20, 25 years. So every year there's one, two, or maybe three new pilots that are hired. So, which is not a lot, but there are places, and they're looking for people with the right experience. So don't give up. It's, again, a cliche, but it's what you shouldn't do. Don't give up.
That's a very good message, and I want to thank you for your time. And I know it must be tiring after a whole day of being in action, and I wish you all the best for the rest of your day.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Laura.
Don't give up your dreams. That was Michael Gill, helicopter pilot at Rega, Switzerland. I invite you to write a comment or a rating on your favorite podcast player. It will help me improve my next episodes. You can write me directly at jobtalespodcast@gmail.com. Next week's podcast episode will be about, well, stay tuned to find out.